This is Uncovering the Truth in Minnesota. I'm Isabel Johnson.
And I am Sarah Neef, and we are an investigative podcast based out of the state of Minnesota. And we would like to welcome you to today's episode.
The following episode contains graphic content and descriptions of sexual assault and murder. It may not be suitable for listeners under 18.
Hi everyone. So this week we have a little bit of a briefer episode for you. We're just going to be laying some groundwork and giving you a little bit of background information on a topic that we'll be covering more in depth in an interview next week. So next week we'll be interviewing Mary Cohen, who is the residential program manager at an organization called Lifehouse in Duluth. Lifehouse works to provide homeless and street youth ages 14 to 24 with support in transitional housing and a safe alternative to living on the streets. So Cohen's going to be talking with us about the impact that COVID-19 and all of the distance and online learning has had on the issue of sex trafficking in the area of Duluth. When you think of online predators, you most likely think of sketchy people sitting in their basement preying on naive kids. And this can happen, but generally it tends to be a widely inaccurate picture. Often sex crimes that occur on the internet happen in the same way that statutory rape happens, where older adults form relationships with underage teenagers and children and convince them it's safe to trust them. And then they gradually escalate the situation and start adding sexual elements to conversations and start introducing them into these new ideas. And then pretty soon they have enough of their trust to get them to meet them somewhere and put them in a bad situation. A study conducted in the early 2000s actually showed that only about 5% of predators pretended to be younger than they were. The targeting that happens for sex trafficking online tends to happen in three main stages: scouting, manipulating, and trapping. So scouting would be where they look for children on social media or in chat rooms. Then they begin to form the relationship and manipulate them and get them to trust them. Then they convince them to perform either sex acts or take drugs or do something that they can then hold over their heads, or they find out enough to threaten them, either by threatening their loved ones or their families or their friends, and then they're trapped. So kids that are especially at risk for this sort of exploitation are children that spend a lot of time in chat rooms and on social media. People who don't use the privacy settings on social media can become really easy targets for predators, because then they can get to know their likes, their dislikes, their dreams, family, friendships, all of that before they even hit the add button. So that means that they know how to start a conversation, they know what this person is interested in, and they know a lot about them before they even start talking to them, which makes it really easy for them to manipulate their victims and get them to trust them. Teens, both boys and girls, between the ages of 12 and 19 is a very common age group that falls victim to this sort of predator, but some victims have even been as young as 9. And victims can be people from all different socioeconomic and ethnic backgrounds. Traffickers often seek out children who appear vulnerable, depressed, or they seem emotionally isolated. They also might appear to have low self-esteem or to have a lot of unsupervised time online. So, of course, this has increased in the light of COVID-19. More people have more free time. People with essential worker parents are left unsupervised in the home. It's all just becoming mixed to create a really bad situation. And victims of sexual assault or domestic violence are also extremely susceptible to being targeted online, as well as people who have run away from home. But it is important to remember that people of all age, gender, backgrounds, anyone can become a target for this sort of predator online. So it's very important that we learn more about this topic.
The 5 major impacts COVID-19 continues to have on human trafficking are as follows. 1, economic stress on families that lead to increased vulnerability. 2, rise in online exploitation of children. 3, spikes in violence toward victims of sex trafficking. 4, jobs and in-person services for survivors are no longer available. 5, interrupted financial support to anti-trafficking organizations. Now that we have heard about the 5 major ways COVID-19 is impacting human trafficking, let's break down a few of those to further investigate. As previously mentioned, we have seen a rise in human trafficking in vulnerable neighborhoods and communities. Human trafficking already thrives on chaos and desperation in communities that are ravaged by addiction and poverty. So with COVID-19, this is just ramping up addiction, poverty, vulnerabilities, violence, abuse, and so on. People will start to get desperate. People will start to take jobs that may be exploitative, off the books, less than minimum wage, and with no legal or health protection. For people in dire economic straits or without legal documentation to work in this country, traffickers will find ways to keep them trapped in human trafficking situations, or they will find ways to introduce them to human trafficking situations. Here is an example of a situation that would make someone vulnerable financially in the COVID-19 pandemic from Polaris. Let's say you are working an hourly job that keeps you just above the poverty line. You likely have no significant savings. Maybe you are a single parent. Then COVID-19 comes along. The quarantine costs you your job, and unemployment has you underwater for rent, struggling to buy food, diapers, all of your basic needs. Friends and family can't help. They are in the same boat. After the quarantine lifts, you apply for every job out there, but you never get a single call or email back. The competition is just too great. Everyone is as desperate as you are. Then, finally, you get a break. At least you think you do. Someone you vaguely know says they have a way you can make some money. Maybe it's something you wouldn't normally do for work, something you are not comfortable with, but it will only be once or twice, or only for a little while. You have lines you won't cross at first. No touching, no kissing, or only with a condom, but the person helping you pushes subtly at first, then less so. That person takes a big cut of the money and urges you to do whatever it takes to make more. Maybe there are threats to you or your child. Maybe there are promises that hold out the only hope you've had for a while. Maybe it's a mixture of both. Maybe there is violence. This is sex trafficking in the United States, and COVID-19 has just made you a target. That is just one example of how COVID-19 can make you a target for sex trafficking in the United States. Sex trafficking, however, already targets marginalized groups without a pandemic in full swing. Let's talk about those marginalized groups. According to Polaris, data from service providers and the U.S. National Human Trafficking Hotline has consistently shown that groups who experience marginalization by race, income, gender identity, sexual orientation, and immigration status are more likely to be exploited through sex and labor trafficking. All available evidence suggests that these same people will become even more vulnerable in the wake of this crisis. The median African-American family has 41 times less wealth than the median white family. African-American homeownership last year reached a historic low, nearly 30% below the rate of white homeownership. Latino families have 22 times less wealth than the average white family. A March 23rd CUNY survey found that 41% of New York City Latinos said either they or someone else in their household had lost their jobs in the last 2 weeks. According to the Human Rights Campaign, or HRC, 1 in 5 LGBTQ plus people lived in poverty, and 40% of homeless youth identified as LGBTQ plus before COVID-19. Less wealth translates directly into less of a cushion to weather a layoff. HRC research also showed LGBTQ plus workers in the United States are more likely to work jobs highly affected by quarantine orders compared to their non-LGBTQ counterparts. Now let's look into some important resources that vulnerable communities and vulnerable people can use during the pandemic to help decrease their risk of human trafficking. Polaris puts the resources into 4 main categories. Those categories include legislation, unemployment and financial assistance, relief funds, and housing and food.
So let's break those down. For legislation, expanded paid time off for workers, which is the first Family Coronavirus Response Act, requires certain employers who have 50 to 500 employees to provide employees with sick paid leave or expanded family and medical leave for specified reasons related to COVID-19. The Department of Labor's Department Wage and Hour Division administers and enforces the new law's paid leave requirements. These provisions will apply from the effective date through December 31st, 2020. There is also sick leave for certain self-employed individuals, which that can also be found in the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Unemployment and financial assistance resources include immigrant workers' rights, which answers frequently asked questions from immigrant workers and their advocates about COVID-19 related topics. The Small Business Administration, the U.S. SBA, is offering designated states and territories low-interest federal disaster loans for working capital to small businesses suffering subsequent economic injury as a result of the coronavirus. American Bankers Association gives an alphabetical list of public announced steps banks of all sizes have taken to respond to the crisis, including support for their clients. There is also a New York Times website called Hub for Help, and this site explains how to get unemployment benefits and other financial assistance. And those are just a few of the unemployment and financial assistance resources. In the relief fund category, the resources include is a domestic workers fund up to $400 in emergency funding per person, Fannie Mae loan lookup, which also has information on mortgage relief and is available from Fannie Mae. Freelancers relief fund offers grants of up to $1,000 for contractors to help pay for their rent, groceries, etc. And EATER is a list of relief funds for restaurants, bars, and food service workers. Riders Emergency Fund, PEN, or PEN, America will distribute grants of $500 to $1,000 to professional riders based on applications that demonstrate an inability to meet an acute financial need. And lastly, Hospitality Relief Funds, a list of national and city/state resources available to restaurant workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. The last area of resources that Polaris spoke about is housing and food. Those resources include tenant protections. Many cities, countries, and states have made policy announcements related to evictions. There is a table of the most recent announcements about evictions compiled by HUD. HUD also provides immediate relief for homeowners. Single parents. HHS has resources, federal program assistance specific to single parents. Food and Nutrition Service. FNS has information about child nutrition programs, supplemental nutrition assistance programs, SNAP waivers, disaster household distributions, and more. And again, those are just the four main categories of resources that people can use during the pandemic. Of course, there's more out there. It just takes a little bit of Googling. And we completely understand that not everyone in vulnerable situations have the resources to Google. So those are just the main sources that we want everyone to be aware of. The final major impact that COVID-19 is having on human trafficking that we are going to look into is rise in online exploitation of children. So let's get into it. According to Dallas News, since the onset of the pandemic, more than 1.5 billion children worldwide are isolated in their homes with digital devices for companionship and connection. Traffickers are moving from the street to the smartphone to seek opportunity for exploitation of vulnerabilities. In the first month of the COVID-19 shutdown, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children reported a threefold increase in reports of online exploitation and abuse, which soared from 300,000 reports to more than 1.1 million, with more than 70% of those reports coming from social media messaging, interaction, and attention from online sources. Predators exploit this thirst for adventure and attention. Social media can be a useful tool for connecting people and maintaining friendships, but it can also exploit youth's inexperience and immature development thinking, placing a child in potentially dangerous situations that they are ill-equipped to handle. Because of the loss of school safety nets and fewer caring adults being able to engage with children to identify symptoms of concern, exploitation can more easily go undetected. So keeping this in mind, with the increase of exploitation of children on the internet, which can lead to human trafficking, let's look into how to be safe on the internet. For parents and guardians out there, I would say teach your children how to be safe on the internet by having an open conversation with them about the dangers of online predators and what they can do to be safe. I recommend not sugarcoating the issue, because that will only make the problem seem less of a threat. Respond appropriately to their questions, and transparency is key. Now, I will also say that some of the safety rules for the internet that I will speak of in a moment here may seem like they are only for children, but these can apply to people of all ages. Everyone can make bad decisions online. After doing a lot of research, I have compiled a list of online safety rules, and those rules are as follows. Number 1. Do not create an account for a site if you are under the age of 13. COPPA, a U.S. law, prohibits the collection of data from those under the age of 13. Number 2. Avoid responding to messages from strangers in general. Just like you should never talk to strangers on the streets or in reality, the same rules applies online. The person you're talking to online could be dangerous and using a fake identity, so it's best to just never talk to a stranger online. Number 3. Avoid joining private forums and chat rooms. By entering a forum, you provide everyone there with your email address, which then can be used to track down your address and personal information. Number 4. Avoid accepting random friend requests on social media. If you have a social media such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, don't accept friend requests from people you've never met before. They may be using a fake profile to hide their true identity, and often, online predators make friend requests to lure you into talking to them. Number 5. Create strong passwords. Your passwords should not be something obvious like your favorite song, your pet's name, a place you grew up. It should be a mix of random letters and numbers that would be difficult to guess. You should also use a different password for every site you log into, and I recommend changing them every few months. I do know that Google offers a safe password supplement every time you create a new account for something, so it gives you an option of a safe password, and you can just use that, and that is a mixture of random letters and numbers. Number 6. Set your social media accounts to private. Make sure all your social media accounts, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, are set to private, and that means only your friends can see what you post. If you leave your account open to the public, strangers can view your profile and potentially learn personal information about you. Number 7. Avoid sharing financial information. Never post pictures of money, checks, or credit card information because someone could use them and try to steal it from you. Avoid sharing the name of your parent or guardian's bank or any financial information with anyone. If you're an adult, avoid sharing your bank name, your bank statements, receipts, any sort of financial information that could lead to a person tracking you down. Number 8. Disable location services. Many phones and social media sites automatically use location services. This means that every time you post a status, a photo, a little rambling tweet, there will be a location tagged attached to it that tells people where you are. If anyone on your social media can know where you are, that means that they can follow you and potentially put you into a dangerous situation. Number 9. Avoid opening spam. Spam consists of advertising, hoaxes, malware, viruses, anything of that sort. Avoid opening emails that promise large sums of money or prizes, and a lot of those times those emails will ask for personal information or if you can send them money. Those are all versions of spam. Never open them. Number 10. Purchase items from reputable sites only. Don't buy something online unless you know it's a trusted site. You wouldn't want to get scammed out of your well-earned money. And again, if you buy something from a non-reputable site, you have to put your
financial information, your personal information. You have to put potentially an email or a phone number, and you also have to put your address for whatever you're buying to be shipped to you, which can all lead to a trafficker putting you into a dangerous situation. And lastly, number 11, always update your virus software on your computer. This might seem kind of redundant and like something that you don't really need to do. You know, I get those little pop-up messages on my computer all the time saying, uh-oh, gotta update this, gotta update that. And I kind of just let it go or don't worry about it. But you should always update your software as much as possible. That will help decrease your chances of getting hacked, any viruses or malware information that could be downloaded on your computer from third-party sources. All of that will decrease if you just update your software.
So that concludes our background episode for this week. We hope that this provided you with some brief context for next week's interview episode. Thanks for listening. If you or someone you know is a victim of human trafficking and needs help, call 911 or the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888. You can also send the text HELP to the number 233-733, or you can call the BCA at 1-877-996-6222. Or email bca.tips@state.mn.us.
Our missing person this week is Tori Jean Grace Bess. She was born on October 11th, 1976. She's female, white, 5'10", and about 155 pounds. She has strawberry blonde hair and green eyes. She was last seen on February 21st, 2013 in Eveleth, Minnesota. She has a history of a transient lifestyle with previous addresses in California, Oregon, and Arizona. Previous to her disappearance, she expressed a desire to return to a warmer climate. The circumstances surrounding her disappearance are unclear. If you have any information regarding Tori Jean Grace Bess, please contact the Eveleth Police Department at 218-744-7560 or call 911.
Other sources for this episode include APA.org and PureSight.com.
Check out our Instagram and Twitter, which both are at UncoveringTheTruthMN. Each Tuesday, we post photos, statistics, and or any other relevant information to that week's episode. We also post new missing persons information, important news topics, and recent crime cases. You can email us at UncoveringTruthMN@gmail.com. If you have any topic ideas, tips, or new information on past episodes, a missing persons case that needs to be shared, or any other relevant information for our podcast.
We would also like to thank our partner, DailyPlanetDC.com. If you go on their website, you can find our podcast along with lots of other great content.